Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of August 2nd through 9th. This week we spoke with Luke Timothy Johnson, a biblical scholar from Emory University, about his article in the current issue called The Jesus Controversy, Why Historical Scholarship Cannot Find the Living Jesus. I began by asking Professor Johnson to introduce us to some of the popular historians who have made the historical study of Jesus so popular today.
Well, the specific point of my essay had to do with teaching in churches. And people like John Dominic Crossan and Marcus Borg and even Bart Ehrman have been tremendously successful as people teaching in especially Protestant congregations, I think because they're wonderful teachers, and they have an ability to present fairly arcane research in a way that makes it plausible and persuasive to ordinary audiences, and offer many Christians what appears to be an alternative to a biblicism which lacks any marked degree of critical intelligence. So they bring scholarship to the lay audience in a entertaining and sometimes edifying fashion.
Now, you started writing about this, as you said, 14 years ago with The Real Jesus, and that's one of the reasons you're invited to talk to these audiences.
My role in this band of minstrels is to be another country heard from. When I wrote The Real Jesus in 1996, it was, in fact, to object to the kind of work that Borg and Crossan and others were doing. Not because I don't think we can say anything about the historical Jesus. I think we can say some things with considerable accuracy about the human Jesus. But rather, because the kinds of portraits that they were deriving, I thought, and still think, don't follow really proper historiographical methods. So I wrote what I thought was a defense of proper historiography, and to my dismay was heard as being against history. Quite the contrary.
In your article, you differentiate between people like, some of the people you mentioned earlier, but also, for example, Catholic biblical scholars like Monsignor John Meyer. How would you differentiate those kind of what he does, his project, from some of the other people you mentioned?
I think John Meyer's. I reviewed three of the volumes that of his work and have read them very carefully. He stands in sharp contrast precisely because he is so methodologically self-conscious and consistent. He cannot be accused of charlatanism or playing to the crowd or presenting a Jesus which is little more than a projection of contemporary desires. All of these things could be said about some of the others. Meyer's work is marked by great sobriety, seriousness, care, and consistency. The downside of it is that, in many respects, it is difficult to work through. And so the very element that makes some of the other speakers popular, that is their capacity to render a simple picture convincingly, is lacking in Meyer. I mean, one can easily get lost in the complexity of his analyses. This does not detract from the worth of what he's doing, but it does mean that he's not a circuit rider like the others.
Well, you had mentioned that many of the current popular historians rely almost exclusively on the Gospel of Luke. Well,
yeah.
Why is that?
In contemporary historical Jesus research, whether it's conservative or liberal, it's the Gospel of Luke 24/7. Every historical Jesus on offer at Borders or Barnes and Noble is fundamentally based on the Gospel of Luke. And there's a very simple reason. The Gospel of Luke presents a Jesus whom we really like. It is a Jesus, if you will, for our age. It is a Jesus who is political, prophetic, public. He challenges conventional norms. He proclaims good news to the poor. And this is the sort of Jesus precisely, which is very, very welcome to especially late 20th and early 21st century liberal academics who do this kind of work, and for many Christians who want a Jesus who is usable. And after all, that's the point of historical Jesus research, is to find a usable Jesus. So if, in fact, all of these efforts simply designated themselves as studies in the Gospel of Luke, or Luke's portrayal of Jesus, I wouldn't have any concern at all. But they claim to be historical, and they fail to deal with the complexities of the problems in the very different portraits of Jesus by John, Matthew, and Mark.
Write in your piece that there obviously is a hunger out there for people who want to learn more about the life of Jesus, yet the options, as you indicate, seem to be limited to kind of a reductionistic account of the life of Jesus, or something like what John Meyer offers, which can be perhaps a little intimidating for the general reader. What else is out there for people who want to learn more but don't have a lot of options?
Well, this is precisely the difficulty. What is the option? The option that I want to argue is that the close, careful, sequential reading of any of the Gospels enables readers to engage a human Jesus who is far more radical, far more frightening, far more demanding, far more life-giving than any of the sociological reductions performed by historical Jesus research. So what do I recommend? The careful, consistent, sequential reading of the Gospels as narratives and the encounter with the literary Jesus found in that Gospel. This is very old-fashioned. It ought to be things that come naturally to us. In fact, we never do it. It's very difficult to find an adult education program in a church that actually reads Scripture in this kind of lectio continua, or continuous reading, sort of fashion. So my argument is that we need more literary criticism and less historical criticism.
Right, you're right that encountering Jesus as a literary character is very important, but it's as you say, doesn't seem to be done too much.
It's hardly done at all. And part of this is, it seems to me, because of the epistemological hegemony. Wow, there's a phrase. The dominance of a single way of knowing after the Enlightenment, which is knowing through, if we're going to know the past, we have to know it historically. And because history can claim to be scientific, it can claim to be empirically verifiable. And so I didn't invent the phrase real Jesus. This was a phrase bandied about by these historical mavens. And in fact, there are a number of ways of learning the human Jesus through the life of the church, through the sacraments, through prayer, and through the careful and pious reading of the Gospels. The Jesus who emerges from the pages of the Gospels is, in fact, the Jesus who has changed Western civilization. The Jesus who has been the stimulus to reform for Francis of Assisi, or for Mother Teresa, or Dorothy Day, or Martin Luther King, is not the Jesus of Marcus Borg, or John Dominic Crossan, or John Meyer. It's the Jesus of the Gospels.
Yes, you write that that Jesus must be learned through the obedience of faith. Maybe you can talk more about that.
When Christians read the Gospels, they read them from the same perspective as the Gospel writers. That is, they are convinced that the one being spoken of through a narrative of the past is also powerfully present in their own lives. That is, everything in the Gospels is written through the lens of the resurrection and through the lens of resurrection faith. And so the reading of Jesus in the Gospels is not to find a Jesus who is more like us or more comfortable to us or one who has the same likes and dislikes we do, but the one who is, in fact, the human expression of God and God's will, the living one who commands us now in our communities, and whose voice in the Gospels continues to be that of the commanding Lord. So we don't read when Jesus says, unless you give up all your possessions and come follow me, you cannot be my disciple. We don't read that in this fashion, namely, what did he really say and under what circumstances, and is it an authentic word of Jesus or not, and what might that have meant back then? We read it more as, wow, what does that demand of me here and now? What do I have to do with my possessions in order to be a disciple of Jesus? That's what I mean by the obedience of faith.
Now, you yourself, obviously, in your own scholarship, have done a fair amount of research into this period of history. Have you found that it can enrich your understanding? I mean, putting aside the literary engagement, the historical engagement, are there ways that has kind of enriched your understanding of Jesus the Christ?
I've constantly tried to make what I regard as a very important distinction. There is a huge distinction between dismantling the Gospels in order to reconstruct a historical Jesus. That's what I'm against. And learning all the history we can in order to be more responsible and appreciative readers of this ancient literature. I teach history. I do history. The more history we know of Palestine in the first century, of empire, of Greco-Roman culture, of philosophy and religion, the better and more responsible readers of the Gospels we can become. But you see, the point of the reading, or rather the point of the history, is to better read these narratives. That's something quite different than pulling apart the narratives in order to reconstruct the life of an individual.
Now, finally, I mean, as you said, you've been following these troubadours around to different churches around the country. Do you find, I mean, are people convinced by your argument? Do you find people reevaluating their perhaps allegiance to these the figures of the historical Jesus?
The very nature of troubadours to not stay where they've performed.
Right.
I think very often that I am invited by pastors, and these are more often Protestant than Catholic, I assure you, especially Presbyterian pastors, who themselves are a little bit chary of the sort of standard approach of these people. They find it a little simplistic. They may have read my book. They know that there are real objections to pose. But I do think that for a lot of folks, my presentations are, however crafted and delivered and interesting, are really a version of the Oprah Winfrey, let's hear every voice. I think that, again, is part of the difficulty, is that, well, that's interesting. Well, that's an interesting opinion. And it is the sort of climate in which serious intellectual contention and controversy is difficult to sustain because there are not really agreed upon rules of conversation. And so it is like a band of troubadours. Well, we saw that show, now let's see the next show. But I think it probably is the slow and patient work of pastors and pastoral staffs that really shape the consciousness of congregations much more than the circus performers.
But obviously, I mean, you must think that there is some fruit that can bear from these efforts of yours, because you find some value in going out there and speaking to these crowds.
Yes, because, and part of it is because I do represent something genuinely different. If I were doing exactly what the others were doing, or even what John Meyer is doing, that is, trying to find the historical Jesus, maybe I wouldn't. But I see myself as something of a whistleblower who says, the whole enterprise, even when it's carried out at its best, doesn't get us to what the real point is, which is to read the gospel narratives within the community of faith. It's the same reason I continue to teach C students, even though they'll never be more than C students. You do what you can, not in virtue of success, but in virtue of truthfulness. I mean, teaching is a form of bearing witness. Writing is a form of bearing witness. You have to speak the truth as you see it from where you stand. Whether or not anybody's going to change or be convinced is not within one's control. But what is within one's control is the allocation of one's energies, and so I use my energy wherever it's desired.
Well, Luke Timothy Johnson, we want to thank you very much for taking some time to talk with us.
Thank you, Tim.
We want to thank you again for joining us for this week's edition of the American Magazine Podcast. Also online this week, we have a video commentary from Assistant Editor Kerry Weber on farm workers, and we also have a review of the film Get Low from John McCarthy. I want to thank Bill McGarvey, who provides the music for the show. You can learn more about him at billmcgarvey.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.